I have called you all here today, at the behest of Don DiMonzo, to discuss the expansion of our Jersey territory. Our Don has seen an opportunity to move into Atlantic City at an event called AC Boardwalk Con, which will be happening May 14th through the 17th, 2015. Don DiMonzo has asked that some of our made men attend this convention and convince the locals to try Two True Freaks. Joining me, Gene Hendricks, on this trip will be my Quantum Cast cohort, Jeff Fishman. Chris Tyler, the hair metal hero, will be representing the Boston arm of the family, while Scott McGregor will be representing the New York branch. Our capo, Chris Honeywell, will also be there to provide some added persuasion. Your Don has asked that any of his loyal friends in the area come and pay their respects to this new endeavor. He reminds you that all the information on the event can be found at doacbc.com. That's doacbc.com. Come help us make Atlantic City an offer they can't refuse.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, grave diggers! And I mean dig as in you enjoy... Never mind. Today we have an interdimensional treat! Phantasm 3! And oh, there's much reason for celebration over this one. All our original ballbusters are back from the original Phantasm, including the original Mike and Jody. But that's not what really makes this movie special for the Chris Keeper. No, this movie has my favorite ballbuster of all, Rocky. And she's not a flying squirrel. No, she's an ex-marine with a mohawk. Look, see, I have a special shrine set up for her over here. There's some pictures and candles, and this is my dream journal. It's where I write down all my dreams about Rocky in full detail. And this one here is actually a dream of a dream that I had. And I've got a little business here with Rocky. Why don't you guys go listen to people talk about the movie?
Hello, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am Late Night Chris Honeywell, and I am here with Chris Tyler after midnight.
Oh, yeah, after midnight. I'm ready for some vanilla.
Luke Giaconetti, the Master of Darkness.
If you don't get it this time, we're going to have to drill it into your head.
And Sean 6 feet Under Engel.
I don't have anything clever prepared this time. I'm sorry.
I obviously set you up to use the Tasmanian Devil line. Why for you bury me in cold ground?
And I've been so waiting to use my Tasmanian Devil voice, so I apologize for totally futzing that.
That's usually like when you have a chest infection or something.
It's funny, anytime somebody screws up now, I just want to have somebody drop in the sound clip from Captain America, the First Avenger, the Red Skull. You are failing! Just drop it in all the time.
God, that would be 90% of my show then. Holy crap.
What? Your show was expertly produced.
Okay. So we're talking about Phantasm 3 this time out.
The Lord of the Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they never gave it the subtitle of Lord of the Dead anywhere in the movie.
Not over here. Not over here.
Oh, was it over
here? I think in Europe they did, right?
Okay.
Or as I was going to call it, Phantasm 3 with flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say, I was really looking forward to this one.
Well, has your opinion changed after you
watched it? No, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I could not wait to watch it, and I was a little worried. I was a little worried, but then again, I don't think Coscarelli's let me down yet.
Nope.
So far, you know, I mean, I just should have faith in him as a filmmaker that maybe even if some of his movies aren't as good as others, there's always something awesome going on, and if it does start to get too cheesy, he obviously means it because he notices it, and all of a sudden something incredibly cool will happen.
Yeah.
So I was really loving the, and was it you, Hero, said this one was like super world building?
Oh yeah.
I
this one and the next one is mythology.
Yeah, I like the fact that this one built a lot more on the world, and it brought back the character, the original actor who played Michael. There's a lot of interesting things that gets answered in here, but not everything gets answered.
Exactly.
There are some leaps in logic of the film, but it's not so bad that it takes you out of it. It doesn't quite have that dreamlike quality that the first Phantasm film had. It's more of just a not really a chase film, but a quest type film. But
it's got more of like a Stephen King story feel to it or something, like, you know, the beginning of Salem's Lot, where, you know, they're going town to town trying to keep up with the vampire, you know, sort of thing. Yeah. It's but then again, there's a lot of stuff set like in dreams. Like, I think this is the first time that you've sort of acknowledged like this person is asleep and dreaming right now and this is their dream. Whereas in Phantasm 1 and 2, pretty much anything is up for grabs, whether it's really happening or whether a character's dreaming it or it's, you know, it just sort of, reality just sort of overlaps. You know, people die and are back in a few minutes, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, the dreaming in this, though, is slightly more structured because of the return of Jody, who is kind of leading everybody in their dreams. And how fucking cool is it that he's back?
That's what I'm saying. The dreams are grounded more in reality in this. So it's like, you know, when something's real and something's a phantasm.
Ooh. What thoughts are fantasy? What memory's real, pretty much?
Right, right.
It's so awesome to see that original cast completely back together.
Yes.
And having him come back.
It is weird at first, though.
Well, they cut around it so well. That's what I was going to talk about, too, was...
Yeah.
Coscarelli is hell bent on making these movies work together.
Right.
You know, he takes what he can from 2, where you don't see James LaGrosse's face, and he reshoots a couple of shots with you know, the original Mike, and it works perfectly. Like, you know, if you had never seen 2, you'd never know that they had to rejigger it.
I was going to say is that the thing that was struck me as odd about this is that we went from the first film where Mike is clearly our main character, our hero of the story, in Phantasm 2, where it's this kind of buddy movie between Mike and Reggie. And then we go here where for pretty much the first 2/3 of this film, this is like a Reggie solo movie. You know,
yeah,
so we're doing a
scene.
Right. Mike is abducted and he's gone. And Mike is now the quest. So we've got, you know, where Coscarelli's not just building the world, as you guys alluded to previously, but we're also kind of examining it through the eyes of different characters and different relationships. Because the world of Phantasm looks a lot different when it's young Mike versus when it's middle-aged Reg, you know, looking at it. You know, the idea of, you're just a kid versus, you know, you're just middle-aged freelance ice cream vendor. You know, so... I did like that it wasn't just kind of rehashing the same setup as the last one. In fact, they ditch what's her name, the Bond girl, real fast.
Her face eaten right at the beginning. Yeah.
But he's giving us different, you know, perspectives on the world that's being built as it's being built.
And it's a strange world. Woo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there. The thing about this world in of Phantasm, there tends to be no one but the main characters in the story.
It's a lonely movie. They're all lonely movies.
Yeah, aside from the little orphanage and the school marm who's taking care of the kids, and the group of the three, Jersey Shore members that they off at the house. Yeah. There's really no one aside from our main cast in the movie, and it gives this really feel of isolation. The only characters in this film are your main protagonist, the tall man, and whatever minions he has.
Well, nobody else is important. It's nobody else's story.
It was the same in the first two movies. In the first movie, you had like their cousins that he went to send Mike off with, but they were just little side things, and they felt weird in the context of the movie because they were like you were with the people who were outside of this whole drama going on, and even when it sort of overlapped with those characters, it did it off screen, and I love that aspect about it because it's a psychodrama, about it, back to Phantasm One, where you're saying, it was Mike dealing with his brother's death. So everything has to be really close to these characters, and it's all going on in their minds too. So you start putting too many people in there and it's going to water it down.
Yeah. I mean, we do get some new characters in this.
Yes, we do, Hero.
Oh, yeah, sure we do. And one of them's a plucky kid. And you know what? I don't hate him.
He's like good Corey Feldman.
He's the evil version of Kevin McAllister at the beginning. Because that way he's got his head booby trapped. Mm-hmm. That is some lethal fucking shit.
Yeah, he had like a board with a bunch of knives coming down and just smashed. Oh yeah,
it was a clown puppet with knives sticking out of it. Forget the paint cans from Home Alone. Yeah. This thing's gonna fucking perforate you.
And he had a sense of humor.
He's
about
a crack
it.
Shot.
Yes,
he's a crack shot too. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
it's like the kid. What was he supposed to be like? 10?
Yeah,
and he's just like, and he shoots the guy in the pit trap to shoots him, and it's like, holy shit, dude!
Well, that's refreshing because that was one of the great things that we loved about like Phantasm One. It's like, here's a kid who drives a car, shoots guns, and his brother's just sort of nonchalant about it. It's just, hey, it's something Mike does, Hey, he knows how to handle that gun, and that at that time period, you could get away with that. These days, or in the 90s even, when this was, people were very hesitant to have kids in movies doing certain things or in a certain way. And it's almost like Coscarelli's like, fuck you, I'm going to have a kid kill often people when I need to.
Yeah, and, he's on his own. His parents got killed by an extra-dimensional being. And
well, he has that awesome where he's like, I'm not a kid anymore.
I know. And after that, he's just like, he buries a hatchet in a woman's face.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Like after that point, he's like,
Tim is a man. I love him in this. I really do.
Well, and for as far as like action movies go, for cold-blooded killerness, you cannot do better than a little kid.
No.
Who does not have a well-formed moral compass or anything.
I think he does, though.
But if you were a little kid and you were in that situation, wouldn't you be like, I'm going to shoot him in the face, or whatever. Is that the vampire coming? Shoot him in the face without hesitation. Whereas, like, a real adult would be just sort of like, I don't know, is it a real vampire? It could be, could not be.
Well,
vampire's going, Bob, it's me.
He saw his father resurrected and kill his mother in a casket. After that point, all bets are off.
Right, right. You fight. You're a valid fight for your life action hero, and I like. But
with
that's
a bladed
risery. He's not the little kid to protect. He's actually bailing out everybody.
Yeah, he knows what the stakes are. He doesn't mess around.
It's not the Titanic. It's not women and children first. It's women and children are pretty much dominating, pretty much kicking everybody's ass.
Speaking of women who kick ass,
Yes.
Can we talk about Rocky? Can we? Oh,
you mean B movie Grace Jones? She was awesome.
She can be my movie Grace Jones.
You know from the jump that she's fucking awesome. Because her friend gets smoked by one of the Sentinel spheres. And she pulls out nunchucks. And you're going, what the fuck? And she starts flipping around. So she clearly knows how to swing them around. She's not just doing it all willy-nilly.
She doesn't scream and cry over her friend. There's obviously something military.
Well, that's one of the things she said. She was in the army, and they taught her how to use the nunchucks in the army.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they do that all the time.
That's what they do.
It's part of basic training, I heard.
Yeah.
And she just, ooh, man, she got flavor, and she don't fuck around. I love her.
She does have flavor.
Was it?
She was trained at the chaplain's assistant school, you know. But, yeah. But, Jesus Christ, I mean, again, it's sweet, you know, it's like very, very 90s right now to have this chick bust out some nunchucks on a Sentinel sphere. And then, what I like, though, is that it doesn't go for the obvious gag that she immediately takes it out. The Sentinel sphere cuts her nunchucks in half.
Yep.
It cuts the chuck part out.
Yeah.
So it's already being a little clever with what when you look at it. I mean, I think I may have seen this film one time before we watched it for this, and I remember when she showed up thinking, "Oh, geez, really? It's like we're doing this, are we?" And then the Sentinel Sphere still was able to outsmart. I'm like, "Okay, now you're taking this what's ostensibly a cliche, you know, the tough black chick with the short hair, and you know, who's the perpetual ass kicker, and you're still playing with it a little bit, you know, you're not just giving it to us, you know, straight up, so to speak."
No, Coscarelle, I'm always just. Whenever I start to lose faith in any of these movies and go, and that was one point where it was sort of like when Michonne showed up in the comics for the first time, and it was like, really, a ninja chick is coming into The Walking Dead? I don't know how I feel about this, you know? and it was the same here. It was just like, oh, and then what can I say, gentlemen? I'm in love.
I was talking to Chris on Facebook earlier, and he was, oh boy, he loves Rocky.
Oh, Rocky. it was one of those rare cinematic treats where you have this the wonderful dream sequence where Reg... ridiculous, just after it's ridiculous.
I'm a little busy here, Mike. Jody.
But they do what I was... Just the last thing I was expecting to do is Rocky's boobs come out. And I'm, unlike Scott Gardner, I'm not a boob guy. It's not that I don't like boobs. I like them. But it's not just like, I'm not like, boobs, here they are, boobs. But boy, Rocky. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, what can you say about a movie where you have an actress willing to take her top off, but an actor in the same scene with her who's not? What if...
Reginald Bannister wrote that scene. Yeah. Said to Bob Coscarelli, look, put this scene in here.
Yes, no one wants to see the ice cream man with his shirt off.
That might be why Reg is in this movie in the first place.
I tell you what. What was funny is that the note I made a note when Reg and Rocky are in the bed in the hotel room the first time. My note is Reg is a bastard. And then 20 minutes later, in his dream, that's exactly what Rocky says to him.
She was on the right track. But she also says, "Oh, Reggie, you're the best."
and I like that Mike is just standing there like... Jody is just standing there like, of course, yeah. This is Reg's dream.
I'm a little busy here, Jody.
But you know, and here's another little touch that I just that's nerd like that you can't help it because people age, but it's just like why would Jody be older, puffy, like Beach Boy Jody, you know, middle-aged Beach Boy Jody, instead of you know, he should technically be exactly like he was when he was harvested. But, you know, how are you going to get... It was just great to see the actual... When they had his voiceover in the beginning, it sounded kind of stilted. And I thought to myself, did they just cobble that from, like, Phantasm 1? or did they get somebody to just do an impression of him? And then he showed up in the movie, and I'm like, oh no, it must have been him. But I, you know, knowing Coscarelli, I wonder if he made it like kind of so you know, if he wasn't aware of that when he did it. I just, having the whole cast back is great. Even though Mike does look like Sean Penn, he still sounds like Mike. He's still got the creak to his voice. It's pretty.
Yeah, but his acting is a lot better in this one.
Because I think when he was in Phantasm 1, he was a really good kid actor, but he was just a kid actor. He'd only had a movie or two, like a movie and TV shows before that. He was still figuring it out, you know. So I just wonder, have you guys seen anything else that either of those two, Mike or Jody, have they been in like TV shows and stuff? Have they gotten any work outside of Phantasm? Are they dentists?
I've really
or
seen
something?
Them in anything but these, beyond.
They work at a grocery store or somewhere or something?
I think they're just committed to Coscarelli. I don't think either of them are. I'm pretty sure Jody probably still is involved in music, but other than this, I have no idea. It might be one of those things where it's just like, you know what? We're doing this with Don, and once it's done, we're done.
Don says I'm a brain inside of a metal ball. Who am I to argue with him?
But you know what? It's cool because now we know what they are.
Oh, yeah. It makes sense. And, you know, it was funny. I was defending that movie Skyline a little bit. Have you ever seen that? Came out a couple years ago.
I heard about it.
Right.
Vaguely remember it.
It's really bad, but it has a corker of an ending. Are you? Was that you laughing, Luke? Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it again. Yeah,
well, but it has okay. So you guys don't know? Do you have you heard what the ending of it is?
No.
It has these people.
Spoil away.
There's a bunch of people. Basically, it's like a really cheapo, you know, two or three set apartment building movie, until the last like 15 minutes. And it's like these people are partying in an apartment, and I believe it's LA, San Francisco, somewhere on the West Coast, and all these spaceships come down, and these sort of matrix like squid things are killing everybody, and you know, so they're trapped inside the building. They're trying to figure out what's going on and escape, and you know, get out through the parking garage, and they're attacked by these things. Bullshit. And then it gets to the end, and you know, you think the main character is going to escape. He gets swept up, and you get this big, long one shot, you know, mostly CG shot of the alien whipping the guy up into the spaceship, where there's thousands of these things all coming in, like gripping people, and they just start plucking the people's heads off and throwing him in a pew, and you see this humongous Scrooge McDuck money pile of heads. And then they're harvesting the heads and putting them into other octopus creatures to go out and hunt. So they're building an invasion army out of the brains of it. And I was like, I sat through that shitty movie for this great fucking corker of an ending. Very imaginative. And they ripped it off from Phantasm 3. So now Skyline, and I was just defending it, saying, yeah, it was really bad, but that ending, you got to say, that's a great premise. And then at the very end, you see the drone that was made out of the hero, but he's retained some of his autonomy.
it sets it up for him, ripping off totally from Phantasm 3.
So
fuck Skyline.
Well, thanks for spoiling that movie for me, because I wasn't going to watch it anyway, now. And now I don't have to watch it.
There's
and
no
I know
reason.
I don't have to watch it.
And that's how it ends. So we have a whole other Phantasm. We have two other Phantasm movies to fill in more. You know, to fill in more of why the brains are in the. Well, we sort of know why the brains are in the balls, but
that's where my brains are.
And that's
I cannot believe we're all dudes here, aren't we?
Not a euphemism.
And funny, you have to shrink the brain down to get it into the balls.
My balls are pretty big, so.
Again, not a euphemism.
Not a euphemism. I tell you what this movie has in spades. I think the effects, you could clearly see the effect of a reduced budget on this film versus on two. But what I think this film really does in spades with the effects that we have is just really makes some really gross crap. Because let me tell you, right at the beginning, when Reg goes into Mike's hospital room and the nurse is one of the...
reanimated
Graver or whatever, and he stabs her, and the yellow embalming fluid in his mouth, it's like, oh god, yep. Yuck, that is the dog.
He's like wiping it off on the sheets too. Yep. So
on the great. Sheets too. See, when my oldest was a baby, when he was a little baby, okay, I was playing with him, bouncing him, and he spat up into my mouth. And oh god, if Gardner was here, he'd go, you know. But so I'm right there with Reg. I know how gross that really must be, and it's like, oh good gravy, oh god. Almost turned it off right there. I also want to point out the scene, I was gonna say also in that scene real quick, I love the fact that the nurse at the desk has those yellow Sony Walkman headphones that I think everyone in my high school had a pair of, because yes. I know I had one.
Yeah, I think those were standard issue in the 90s.
Yeah, I think those actually came with
the
yellow Walkman.
The yellow Walkman that everybody had too. Yes, so
with the flip closing latch.
I have one of those that I got at a garage sale this summer.
Awesome.
Nice.
Right, sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
I was going to say another one of the effects that I was really impressed with was the use of the spheres or the orbs or whatever you call them. I mean, I don't know whether they've got them on strings. I assume they're not CG'd in, because they cast shadows over the people's faces when they're moving around, and it looks like they're either on wires or on
probably on monofilament, because you'd never see that.
But the movement of them is really effective. It's a heck of a lot better than a lot of CG stuff.
Well, you know
and the
why?
Fact that it's in there. Yeah,
I have a theory of that. It's funny. I was just formulating that while you were saying that. I think it's on monofilament, and you notice they have a sort of bounce to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way they fix that is with the sound effects. You have that sort of now I'm trying to think of the word of when you have a spinning sphere to keep something level, a gyroscopic sort of sound to them. They sound like they have a motor that's mm-hmm. going with a gyroscope. Mm-hmm. And so when they do that little wobble,
they adjust the pitch of the tone of whatever's propelling it.
And
so,
it makes
that's
them seem cool. Alive. It makes them seem like they're, they're powering up and down, and they're, they're not just going in a straight, they go in a straight line when they've got a bead on something.
Mm-hmm.
They dart in, but otherwise they're sort of cruising whirring up and down, and I think that just worked out well with the bounce of when you take something and throw it along a monofilament string.
Well, it definitely helped them being that really bright, shiny silver that casts the reflection of the actors or whatever that they're going against on the ball itself. That really helps sell that they're actually a part of the shot, because if that was done in CG, it couldn't be done, especially at this level of budget. So the fact that they're actually putting in there just makes it all that more impressive.
Yeah, I mean, when that one goes through the zombie woman's face, oh my god, is that just pure joy. Perfectly beveled spherical hole in her skull.
It's like a Chuck Jones Looney
yes, it is.
Tunes gag right there,
Yep.
Yeah, and I think they toned down that sort of Looney Tunes / Evil Dead 2 from the last movie into this one.
I think it's still about the same.
It doesn't seem as over. It has its moments, but this one has more. I like this one a lot more than I like Phantasm 2, which I liked. But I like this one a lot more because of the world building and the story.
Yeah,
and his willingness to just start throwing twists in, like, oh, Mike's got a ball embedded in his head.
And you're going, what?
Yeah, yeah, which would actually go back to what you were saying. You guys were saying earlier about this one being more from Reg's point of view. Maybe Reg, maybe the last two movies, since they were more from Mike's point of view, have been ball induced or ball influenced in some way.
Yeah.
Well, I love saying ball induced.
Ball induced, yeah.
Well, it's, you know, it's something.
Jokes.
Yeah.
You
know something's up at the beginning when Reg pulls out the grenade and says, the only way you're getting Mike is in pieces.
I'll wait.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, what is going on? I mean, we know he wants him, but it's like he's gonna, ooh, he's just so evil.
It's one of the things that we're never
And also in that scene also where we see where they, you know, they destroy the tall man at the end of two, and, you know, tall man 3.0 simply comes out of the gate and takes the other one, disposes of him, and he's good to go again. I thought that was like, you know, we've covered a lot of films here on the Vault where we deal with killers that seemingly are unkillable for one reason or another, you know, but here, this is actually showing us why. It's like, okay, well, this tall man is just a shell of something else. It's just something so that he can interact with our world, and one shell is as good as another.
Yeah, as long as it looks like Angus Grimm.
What the tall man says to Mike, that looks like Angus Grimm. But the tall man then says to Mike, "You've lived in that flesh shell for too long." So the idea, and he's, what is it? Whatever you see is not necessarily what you should believe.
Yeah.
So, okay, the idea of the tall man, that is just a shape. That's just an image, a simulacrum,
mm-hmm.
if you will. And it doesn't have anything to do with what the reality of what the tall man is. It's just a way for him to interact. It's his shell. Nothing in this film is really what it seems on the surface.
Not at all.
I would be perfectly...
And that's been true so far of all the films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be perfectly happy not to know if the tall man... you know, revives himself or whatever, if he does, because from, and you know, I mean, how many times has Reg died in these movies? You know, just like in the first movie, isn't he just getting stabbed repeatedly as he screams and dies? It works. A lot of times I'd be like, oh, don't take the magic out of it. But that scene where he goes and gets his, you know, last husk of his last body was great.
Yeah, I don't think we need an explanation for the tall man necessarily. I don't think we need an explanation for the tall man necessarily, but I would like an explanation of why, and I'm hoping eventually we'll get this, of why the tall man is so interested in Mike.
Right.
What is his, you know, what's the motivation behind him having to go after Mike, his brother, and what kind of purpose they have to the movie.
I think
maybe that's just how it is with every single person he gets. They all get their own little phantasm treatment.
Hmm. Yeah, well, we'll have to wait for Ravager for that. The next one builds on it a little bit more, but does not really give you any true answers.
Okay. Yeah.
It should. It almost should never. Well, maybe Ravager is going to finish it off, but still, it's always great.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, Chris. I don't think I don't need to know the details of why or how the tall man works, but the fact that it's addressed, it's addressed even in a very kind of esoteric way, that he's resurrected and it's not a big deal for him. It's not like Friday the 13th Part 6 where it's a ritual and he's struck by lightning like a universal monster. This is just Tuesday. You know, it's like, oh, that one is dead.
Yeah, like a suit.
Press the green button. I've made another photocopy. Yeah, he's got a closet full of these suits that he can just put on as he goes. And so I like that because it explains it, but doesn't. It gives an explanation. It's like, okay, there he can make another simulacrum of himself. But then you're like, but wait a minute, but it's too late. You can't ask that question because now the plot is happening. You know.
Yeah.
And so I like that it's showing it to you. It's showing everything you need. It's just not explaining it. So. You know, I mean, I thought this film was pretty good. I really did thought it dragged a little bit kind of in the second act, that it kind of like, okay, we could have tightened this up by a good 5-10 minutes. But overall, I mean, like you said, it does a great job of doing the world building. So it keeps your interest from an intellectual standpoint, even if there's some scenes that probably run a little long, which you get in a cheap film. You know, a longer scene is cheaper than a shorter scene, you know.
Yep.
But it's like I said, it's just been... We talked about this, it was either on Phantasm 1 or Phantasm 2, that having this consistent vision and this consistent story makes everything work so well from its own internal logic. Everything that is from a story-driven standpoint is consistent because you've got one guy coming up with all this stuff. You know, the behavior of each of the characters is consistent and believable because it's not okay. It's not a, you know, we wrote one. You know, the original writer wrote the original, and then we bring in another screenwriter and he's looking, trying to figure out how they would act. No, it's the same dude writing it, so he knows how his characters are supposed to behave.
Yes.
And it's the same actors, so it's not. There's no interpretation. It's like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. It's the same motivation. I've been here the whole time. So it's really like unique from a standpoint like that, from a franchise series, to have such consistency on the creative side.
It's only one guy doing it. That's why.
It's not like the Harry Potter films where you come in, you have different directors and different writers coming in, and each film has its own distinctive flavor. That's the
and
one thing
big
that
studio looming over you.
Yeah, I think the fact that this is a small independent film that Coscarelli is probably doing pretty much by himself with very little studio influence allows him to do what he wants to do with the film. And it gives it, you know, even though we had a sort of not really a misstep, but a bit of a change in the second movie, it wasn't so drastic a change that it threw out the entire overall or continuity feeling of the entirety of these movies so far.
No,
so
I
that's a definite plus.
I think that the change in the other movie segues really good into this, smoothly into this movie.
I was going to say, I agree with you because they're still on the offensive. It's not Mike and Reg, you know, gun-toting badasses rolling from town to town, but they're still on the offensive. They're still trying to track down the tall man, ultimately. So that proactive, action-oriented approach that started in 2 continues here. It's different. The team is different. The makeup is different. And the motivation for Reg is not necessarily have to go hunt down the tall man. It's I need to go rescue my friend. But it's still that same kind of proactive sort of approach from the heroes, which was introduced in the previous film. So I think I agree with you completely. I think it begins that trend, and this one continues it very nicely, that we can believe, having seen Reg and Mike being, you know, the two killers of the Old West, essentially, cutting down gravers and lurkers in 2, we can believe them doing the same kind of stuff in 3.
I think this relates a lot to the we were talking about the Friday the 13th movie, sort of parallel to these. And once again, like, by this movie, it's firmly, I think we gotta firmly establish that Coscarelli is playing to a fan base and not to a wide audience, you know. So you can, like, he can do that, and he can, and I think maybe with Phantasm 2 he wasn't really thinking about there being a Phantasm 3. He just sort of wanted, it had a feel to me like, all right, there was Phantasm 1. And then you got Phantasm 2, which I think, Luke, you said that was the biggest budgeted one of all four so far.
Yes.
And he probably thought, in a way, I want to sort of remake Phantasm, sort of in the way that Evil Dead 2 remade Evil Dead as a remake, but not really. It's like, okay, here we have a real budget. Let's amp this up, you know, a bit. And I think that's what he did, and probably thought that was going to be it. And then by the time he was thinking, okay, Phantasm 3, then he was thinking, maybe I should have Phantasm 4 and possibly 5 and 6 in mind too. And started, like Hiro said, world building with this one. I love it. It's just like, you can see a franchise taking off. And when you're an indie guy like Coscarelli, sort of something like this, you want to sort of see if you can make it work, you know, because that could be your retirement fund, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the people aren't beating down Coscarelli's door to throw money at him.
Unfortunately.
It should be.
Yeah, because, I mean, after John dies at the end, it's like, give this man money. It doesn't have to be a ton of money. Just give him money and let him cut loose.
Yeah, you don't have to give him he can obviously do an awful lot with very little money. Every penny is definitely on the screen in this movie.
Oh, yeah, whether it's midgets or brain balls or bombing fluid or anything.
You got all that, but then what I was thinking for the dollars in this one, was that stunt of the hearse flipping end to end.
It's not even end to end. It like it goes straight up and it starts spinning, rotating on its axis. It's like, holy
it's unbelievable.
Shit.
That was an incredible stunt.
The cast stunts and all that have been good.
Crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine being a guy in that car? There was a driver driving that stunt car.
Oh. Yeah, that's why they death-proof cars. But you know what's crazy is that right before the hearse scene in that, there's another stunt, which is friggin' bananas to me, which is when, you know, the hearse pulls up next to the Hemi Cuda, and they're, you know, the three Jersey Shore zombies are trying to get at him. Okay, they, you know, they shoot the blonde with the shotgun, and then it's like she goes down, and I'm thinking, oh, are they going to do it? And they run her over. And that's a stunt woman getting hit with that, getting hit with the, you know, the squibs going off and then going down under the wheels of that car. It's like, oh, man, that is
kidding
was rough.
Me.
That's no, it really looks like a stunt woman, to be honest with you. And I know that you can do that stunt. You load one side of the car up so that it's actually only it's running almost on two wheels.
Oh,
on
my
the
God.
Driver's side. But it's like whether that was a stunt woman or a dummy, it was.
It's impressive. It's
freaking effective, it was awesome.
If it was a stunt woman, I'm going to just go ahead and say that it's like beyond impressive.
I mean, I'm going to have to look at it again because I was just watching the film all the way through, but I'm pretty sure that was a stunt woman. Listeners, if you know that one way or the other, please write in and tell me because my mind is blown.
So it hurts.
I just had to go put on a helmet.
That's more impressive than any other stunt that I've seen in any other movie, if that is the case. And if it is just a dummy, it's an effective enough looking dummy.
It's a
that
real
it,
good.
It
oh, yeah, it's a freaking
out.
Great effect then, yeah.
Oh, it was as good as any body under the wheels in Road Warrior.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. I mean, that to me is like, you know, like we talked about forever ago, you know, Deep Red has a scene like that, mm-hmm. which is clearly an effect. And it's like Deep Red, I'm willing to bet, was probably made for probably about similar money as this. But this, I mean, again, whether it's a stunt or whether it's an effect, it's freaking insane. And it looks great. And then, like you said, Hero, what they do to this hearse is like the physics doesn't work that way. How the hell did you do that?
I don't know how they did it. Maybe it was a model for that shot. I don't know. But regardless, it looks amazing.
It couldn't have been because it was.
I saw a making of that scene, and it was a real stunt.
Wow.
I think they may have like blown something up under the ass end of it or something, but that was a real stunt.
Okay, and here's a movie vignette. A stunt for the horror movie Phantasm 3 came off without a hitch on Mulholland Highway tonight. Ah, looks like a tough way to make a living. Stunt driver Bob Ivy suffered only a broken fingernail, though. Oh, whoa. The stunt cost $20,000 if you want to see the rest of that movie. Phantasm 3 opens in the fall. Oh. I don't want to do that.
Heck of a stunt.
The only thing I've seen of this movie was on YouTube. I saw all this raw footage of like Red shotgunning, you know, the midget people in as they were eating, you know, Mike's girlfriend's face and shotgunning him out of the trees. But it was like raw footage. And, and then they had the footage of them, you know, talking about, and then we did this stunt, and then they showed the stunt, and like, you know, first thing was everybody was rushing to the car, they get the guy out, and then you could just see the Ewok celebration begin. They were just like, you got that on film, right?
Oh, now you mentioned this real with the raw footage you were just talking about. When he shoots the lurkers out of the tree, how the hell does he hit the ones that fall down?
Buckshot, I'm guessing.
It's four barrels in the.
That now covers
paper.
Like a 360 degree radius.
Sure, it's only 180. It's only 180.
Sure, why not?
I mean, the one of them comes. He's so obviously being thrown from off.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was definitely a 1, 2, 3.
I was waiting
three.
For a few more to fall down.
I thought it was a couple more would have been funny, too.
Just standing there like, is that all of them?
As he was walking off at the end, they just should have had one last one just go bump.
That puts Roger Moore shooting the guy in the trees and Moonraker to shame.
Yeah. And that scene's already a little suspect, but...
Yeah.
My favorite little detail in this, well, I like that they kept going to all the hicks on the edge of town. There were like two great sets of hicks on the edge of town. One in his you know, sort of separate motel room, and the other sitting out on his chair out front. The guy with the and out in the chair out front, he had great signs hung
yes,
up.
Yes, he did. You got to talk about the yeah. Magnum double action and 357, and then the Q-tips at the bottom.
And Q-tips.
That's got to be just some real dude that they found. That's got to be, you know.
Either that or it's some inside joke or something, but it's just beautiful. It's fucking... I'm like, because like I'll always, a scene will be going on that my aisle wander to something. It's like, okay, the old guy's selling guns. Makes sense. And Q-tips.
Yep. You need them sometimes.
Now, remind me of this, and this might just be the sort of small elephant in the room. Did the CUDA change? I don't remember it having a convertible top.
It didn't, but he also mentions that he spent 2 years restoring
working on it. So that's an easy way out. You know, that's a way to say that it's not the same CUDA as they had in the first movie.
No, but it's still the same guy.
Okay.
Why not?
Sure.
I'm impressed that Reg fit in the trunk. I mean, the trunk on the Hemi CUDA is not that big, and Reg is a pretty big guy. He fit in there. I was pretty impressed.
Maybe it was a custom job.
They didn't like have to snap his spine in half to fold him in.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
Well, just maybe Reg, knowing his past history, customized the trunk just in case of that. Every once in a while, you end up in the trunk. What I say, you know.
I gotta put some midgets in there.
Reg I wanted like to fit at least 8 of these midgets.
I just like the poor man's Bruce Campbell. It's sad.
Well, no. Well, that's the thing is, it's like it's almost like this hilarious parody of Bruce Campbell. But I gotta say, I just love the guy, man. There's something about his mannerisms and his cheesiness that's endearing. And then there's genuine moments where he's just, I don't know if he's non-acting where he's just being himself, but he has that 70s casual air of like, you know, your older cousin who's like 8 years older than you, who's just sort of like, hey, dude, how you do? You know, he's just got that California laid back thing going. And it comes out real natural at some points, you know.
Yeah, usually when he's talking to Jody.
Yes.
It seems like he's like, Jody, man, where you been? It's just like he's never left.
And it comes off as really authentic. And when he's an action hero, it's cheesy, but they also play off, you know.
He yells a lot like a girl. Like, he's not unflappable. He gets bothered, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, he's not Bruce Campbell. And he's played as... But really, the only thing that makes him not really an action hero type of actor is that he's got that balding...
Yeah, he's bald. He's got a gut.
In the cheesy...
And ponytail.
And which just makes you sort of look beta male, I guess, in the movies, you know. But if he had a full head of hair, they could dress him up and make him into just like, you know.
Well, that I mean, the other thing is Bruce Campbell for Army of Darkness. He worked out like he's pretty cut in that movie. I don't think there was any possibility that Reg was going to work out.
Well, I think and it preserves that feel of like, hey, I got my best friend to be in the movie. What can I say? You know.
Yeah.
But I picked him because, you know, the guy's a riot, you know.
Yeah.
I also like to think that I'm willing to bet a lot of the, you know, quote unquote costumes provided here probably came out of the closets of the people.
Yeah, that
them.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
When Reg and Rocky are in bed, the pajama outfit he busts out, those pajama pants are slamming. They are slamming. And it's like, you know that that is, you know, hey man, bring your pajamas. Okay.
I like pajamas.
You know, that's why Rocky was so hot to do him in his dream, I guess.
Well, it's his dream.
Those pajamas just pajama pants.
No, they cannot.
I love the green flannel with the purple tee. That is something I would totally pull off. The green t-shirt underneath.
Yeah.
I dig it. And then we have Mike looking like Johnny Cash the whole movie. I mean, he's head to toe black.
Yeah.
Yeah, those lenses, those scleroid lenses they give him at the end that are reflective, that is so creepy.
Yeah, he goes all Gary Mitchell from Where No Man's Gone Before.
Bizarre.
It's like, he's got, you know what, it's actually like Sean Penn mixed with the kid from Escape from Witch Mountain.
I wouldn't wish Sean Penn mixed with anything. I don't know. He can join Catherine Heigl. Now you have to release this one second.
You're the second person I've heard bitching about Sean Penn today.
Well,
I was going to say, you know, speaking of Catherine Heigl, what does this film also have? A tub of liquid nitrogen.
Yes.
It's really amusing.
Oh, you're right. Oh, that's right.
At least yeah, Catherine Heigl.
And I love this to free floating heads.
Yeah.
Go Catherine Heigl on this one.
Thank God.
Well, Sean, you would know, right? That's how they preserve heads, right? They just get a vat of liquid nitrogen and just toss them in like it's cannibal stew or something. Toss another head in there.
I wouldn't have been surprised if one of the heads would have been somehow molded in a way to look like Walt Disney, but they just dressed it in a certain way to make a sort of sarcastic joke about Disney supposedly. Yeah.
Oh, well, I think Timothy Leary had his head frozen too.
I didn't see Ted Williams in that.
That's to say, in Ted Williams, that's the other one.
That would have been great.
That's terrible. You know what else was great? When you get your hands chopped off and they turn into little monster creatures.
Those were some great special effects as well. The weird sort of the backs of the hand, the stumps of the hand, having those weird alien-esque, almost Venus flytrap-like teeth.
Yeah.
Creepy. That was and climbing up Reg's pants, you know.
Of course, and then Rocky having to go in there and stab him almost in the junk. So,
yeah. Yeah. I can handle this. Like, she ain't going to let you.
Well, here's the thing. What person goes up and opens up the moving rucksack like that, you know? I would have like a 4-foot stick.
I'd be running the other direction.
Or shoot it. Just shoot the whole backpack.
Shoot the bag, yeah.
Toss the backpack in the fire.
Yeah.
Yep.
How about that?
Well, they weren't thinking.
Yeah, it's not like a squirrel. Even a squirrel, you have to be like, is it rabid? This is a disembodied hand that, hey, they remember that fly. Was that Reggie? That was Reggie with the fly, right?
It was all three.
No, in the first one, that was.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, no, that's right. Reggie showed up after the fly, and he's like,
it was.
Reggie saw the fly, though, because he showed up right after they thought they'd killed it the first time. He was like, hey, what's going on?
Holy
what you guys
shit.
Been doing in here? Yeah. And then the fly was back. I think the fly was sort of Reggie's introduction into the world of craziness.
Yeah, I think it was.
So he should have known when there's two hands.
Yeah.
But that was great. That was a great way to... you know, put a twist on, you know, the tall man getting one of his appendages severed and then turning into some sort of hellish creature.
Yes.
And it was nice to have a callback to the first one.
Well, it had a lot of the same beats
the gate,
as
which
that.
Was a nice. Yeah.
Where it would slow down, speed up, and.
Yeah, they didn't have any one of it climbing up the back of Mike's head, though.
No.
Funny.
No, you almost can't beat that.
No, you can't. Yeah, this one is fun.
I tell you, it's fun. It's a lot funnier than the last one too, in a lot of ways. You know, there's some comic relief for sure in Phantasm II. I always think of the, you know, Reg with the chainsaw, and then the Graver pulls out the gigantic chainsaw.
Yeah.
Which I'm sorry, that's just funny. But this really takes kind of a more, which is a more 90s sort of approach to it, with adding the bit of humor in there, which is it's welcome, because, you know, these are fairly grim.
Well, yeah, they're all, you know, about death.
Very morbid films. Yeah, and not just death, but like we said back with the first Phantasm, kind of the rituals and the fetishization of the rituals of death, which are this kind of weird, mysterious world that most of us, you know, we might get a glimpse of it if we have a loved one die, but that behind the curtain, so to speak, it's all just kind of shrouded in mystery.
Yeah.
So here we kind of get away from that, and it's more just kind of a romp in a lot of ways.
It is, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's probably people that think it's probably one of the slighter ones in the franchise, but I can't say that because of the fact that they bring the original cast back, they explain not necessarily everything, but they do drop those breadcrumbs, and then they have the slap in the face ending of, oh my God, what is going on with Mike? And not only that, but the very ending itself where Tim says, Mike wanted me to tell you that there's thousands of them, thousands of what? And then you see Reg pinned by all the spheres on the wall. Then our plucky kid hero gets taken out. And it's like, what? It's really like we went through that whole romp and then we get all the stuff dropped on us. And it's just, what the hell are they going to do next? And it calls back to the original one with boy, and this time it's no, it's not. And then it just, you get that slamming sound, and you start playing the Phantasm theme, and you're like, what the hell did I just watch? I can't wait to see. What's going to happen?
That's how it's supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, tall man's, it's
never over.
Never over. That was pretty awesome.
Boy. Well, yeah, like when they get him in the freezer there and his head's moving, and then of course he has to stop dead middle of the camera and look out at everybody. It's like, it's just, he knows how to play that character, and he's so much fun to watch because he's having a good time doing
it. Oh, he's obviously having a riot, so much so that they're bringing him back out of the old age home to do Ravager. I mean, he's got to be in his 70s, right?
It doesn't matter. I mean, he had some vitality in John Dies at the End in the that he was in it. And I mean, honestly, he doesn't have to really run a jump or anything. He just has to stand there and glop.
You just have to prop him up. Basically.
And all he has to do is walk and talk. That's it.
I'm really looking. Ravager is just another incredible bright point in the summer coming. Is it the summer? But in 2015,
I don't know, but it's coming soon. Yeah.
It's sometime in 2015. Yeah.
Yeah. It was supposed to be originally the holiday season 2014, and now it's been pushed. But I'm hoping 2015 we'll get to see.
I think it's guaranteed for this year.
Ravager, and so that'll be something.
Yeah.
I did want to just mention this here. Is that we did get actually for this film some pre-listener feedback.
Ooh,
so we're so forward thinking. We're actually getting feedback from before the
future.
The show was even released
from the past.
So and this comes from the future and the past. It's all this is your expertise, Sean, with this timey-wimey crap, isn't it?
Sure, why not?
But devoted listener and friend of the show, my brother Jason. Wrote in with some notes that he found for Phantasm 3, which he thought we might find interesting. He says,
excellent.
Hey guys, here are a few things for Phantasm 3. Production started late 1992 and wrapped in mid-1993. Universal then shelved it for about a year and a half after a very limited theatrical run, and it was released on video in 1995. Now, I don't remember Phantasm 3 ever being in theaters, so that's got to be a really, really limited theatrical run. Any of you guys remember this?
Not at all. Theaters? I remember the second one, but not the third one at all.
Right. I remember it coming out on video, but I don't remember, like I said, I don't remember it. Because 95, that was when, that was when I was starting to pay attention to horror sequels on video and stuff. Cinefantastique magazine would cover it, but
I could have sworn it was probably a direct-to-DVD, so I'm surprised that it even got that. Direct-to-video,
Let's see. Next note. First Phantasm film to use digital effects. When Bill Thornbury is compressed into the sphere and the event horizon for the plane of the space gate, both digital effects, first for the series.
Nice.
Now, the morphing of Jody into the sphere, when they do it, it is definitely a 90s-style effect, but it's pretty neat to see something like that in a Phantasm film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First and only film to have the main characters refer to the dwarves as lurkers, the gas mask gravediggers as gravers, and the spheres as sentinels. Now, I haven't seen 4. Is that true? Do they not refer to them as such in the next one?
I can't remember.
I haven't seen
sorry.
It.
I do like that, though, because it's almost like the heroes have learned the correct terminology at this point.
Well, or they've made it up themselves between them so they don't have to go through the, like, you know, the short guys.
or kind of like they do in The Walking Dead, where they call them walkers or lurkers or whatever like that.
Yeah.
Now, this last one, I hadn't heard this, so, but this is interesting. An alternate ending was shot that has Reggie and Tim head to Alaska and dig a hole in the ice. They bury the tall man with a metal plate over it that reads, "Here lies the tall man, R.I.P." When they are done, Reggie says, "Now all we have to worry about is global warming."
Boo.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm not disappointed they didn't go with that one.
Yeah, that's not good.
What did Al Gore infiltrate the Coscarelli film?
No. The planet has a fever.
For the flavor of Pringles.
The inconvenient truth is that aliens from another dimension are stealing our dead and turning them into silver spheres.
That's true.
There's some people that don't want to accept this truth.
You know, I would buy Al Gore more if he promoted that idea rather than the whole global warming thing, but whatever.
Yeah. That ending actually makes me think of the ending to Warlock.
I haven't seen that.
The one with
our heroine buries the with Julian Sands, where she buries the Grand Grimoire in the middle of the salt flats in Utah,
or the blob,
because the salt will burn the blob again. Yeah, they throw it in the Arctic. Yeah, but so it's like you know, there's something to be said for that. But Jay says that's about it. Have a good show, and thank you, Jay. That's some good stuff. That alternate ending, I'm so glad they didn't go with that. That's silly even for this movie.
It's too jokey, man. You can't have a Phantasm end like that.
Not with a thud. That's thud for sure.
Yeah, the only Phantasm movie that can get away with a non downer, like, depending on what happens with Ravager, if that one gets all tied up, I'll be okay with it. But no,
somebody needs to get dragged backwards into something.
Yeah. Or forwards, doesn't matter.
Or forwards, either way, somebody has to be screwed horribly.
Yeah, I'm sure this.
And not in the way that 50 Shades of Grey is going to be.
Is this what we've come to? That, you know, intelligent, thoughtful horror films like this are relegated to the direct-to-video rack, and, you know, trash like that gets covers of magazines and other nonsense? The answer is yes. That's the problem.
Well, you know, that's because we're going to get the Hollywoodized version of a master-dom, sub-dom relationship.
Okay, yes. So I was just talking to somebody else earlier about this, and I just have to say, you guys, do not look the gift horse in the mouth. Think of this as a cinematic atrocity in the making. Have you, any of you guys, like, I know nobody's read it cover to cover, but has anybody tried to read 50 Shades of Grey
I don't read fan fiction.
All I know is my wife has read it.
Well, if you got it laying around the house, it's worth reading it just for sheer how the hell did this get published?
Because it was Twilight fan fiction that got rejigged.
Right, but it's Twilight fan fiction that seems like it was written by a 12-year-old virgin boy who may not have even had access to the internet to learn how sex works.
Whatever, man. It's going to make a ton of money. It's going to make a ton of money.
Well, yeah, people are going to go to it because it's like, dirty or whatever. But
you know what?
Book is such an atrocity that to clean it up and make it into a Hollywood movie, we're going to get a gift, you know, on the level of The Room.
You're
a media masochist, Adam.
Oh, but like a media masochist in the best way, you know, not one it's where it's like, oh, I hope I can get through this.
I will take that journey with you when the time comes, Chris.
It could very well be. Well, have you heard that, like, the movie theaters are, like, there's one movie theater chain is going to put plastic down on the seats. It is great.
Women are going to spontaneously climax watching this crap?
Well, maybe there might.
Only if you're
well,
their hero.
There's.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
I'm thinking I just go in there with a squirt bottle, you know, one
full
of those
Jergens,
full of Jergens or full of like tartar sauce or something.
You son of a bitch!
And just in the dark of the movie theater, you could blast a stream of that 14 rows ahead of you. Nobody'd even know where it was coming from, and just cause it would be like Stand By Me when they were telling the story of the kid who started the puke off. It would be awesome. And God bless how the fact that there's going to be a huge budgeted Hollywood porno written by the equivalent of like a 10th grader, 10th grade report level of comprehension of the English thing. It's, what are you talking about? That's just yummy for my tummy. Oh my God.
And now a quick update. As you can hear, this show was recorded a few months ago. 50 Shades of Grey has come out, and Chris once again is 100% wrong. The movie was boring. And now, back to our show.
Phantasm, ladies and gentlemen.
It makes us talk about crappier movies.
How did we get
on? You know what?
There won't be a
50 Shades of Grey 3 or 4 or 5.
So. Yeah, there will, because it's three books.
It's three books, and they're going to make it into 4, just like they did with Twilight.
Yeah, if this movie tanks, I doubt that they'll do the second one.
We all know, guys, it's not going to tank.
It's not going to tank. It's going to be huge.
But I'll tell you what.
That's the absolute problem. Yeah.
I'll tell you what. It can, even though it's huge, any sequel to this, I'm telling you, is going to 50 Shades of Grey, is going directly to video, because you can only come back with that stuff for real when the movie's going to... Unless for somehow somebody rewrites it into something completely different and then it's really good, which I cannot imagine. But at the same point,
look, I don't know why we're talking about this, and I'm sad that we are.
Because
we're talking about how much we're looking forward to.
Because we were talking about Ravager. I'm looking forward to Ravager. I'm looking forward to Oblivion. We got to cover Oblivion next. Let's talk about that. Let's go out on a high note.
Well, I haven't seen that one yet either, so I'm just as excited. And now, does that one have real Mike in it? And same cast
and crew? Oh, yeah. And more world building.
All right.
A lot more. Get on up for it. It's going to be good. Less flavor, but still good.
We're gonna build the world, and then we're gonna drill a giant hole in it.
Can I ask another question, seriously, guys?
What?
Does Rocky come back?
No. She bounced at the end, man. She did what she wanted to do. She hugged
Greg
and said,
"All
right, that's enough of that."
Happens all the time in Phantasm, doesn't it?
She lives though.
People go away.
She doesn't get killed.
She doesn't get killed like the little boy. It's amazing. She takes the hearse and she's gone.
Now I have heard a rumor that she is back in Ravager.
Really?
I've heard a rumor about it. I don't know if it's true.
Conceivably, she could show up at a convention, is what you're saying.
I'm just saying.
Who's going to be stalking
on a press
Costco
junket? Maybe.
that's a little movie in the making. You guys can just like document my trip to the con while I ask her for her hand in marriage, and then she hacks it off and it turns into a demon creature.
Oh,
hey man, she doesn't do dairy. Gives her grass.
Oh shit! And I got the same hairline as Reg.
Just need to grow out the ponytail.
Yeah,
I'll get a clip on.
Clip on ponytail?
Sure, why not?
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."